You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It has become an all too familiar feeling walking out of the away end at the Emirates and across the bridge past those big Arsenal letters thinking, what could have been? How close was that? And really, more than anything, for fuck's sake. For a second successive year, an Argentine celebrated with intensity and passion as United appeared en route to a famous victory. Last year, Lisandro Martinez's brilliant header was made futile by a 90th minute winner checked by VAR. This year, Alejandro Garnacho's wonderfully composed one-on-one finish was ruled out for the tightest of offsides, and Declan Rice's 96th minute deflected strike won it for Arsenal. It was gutting, really gutting. So welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast. Let's get through another painful away match together. Thank you for joining us. I'm Harry Robinson. Jack Tate is with me. I think we all know how we felt after that one, but there's plenty more to discuss because there were some real positives, that's for sure. There's several pieces of significant off-the-pitch news, most of it bad, and a 10-goal thriller for the Academy, plus several deadline day signings, which we'll discuss at the end of the show. So we won't be wallowing in pity for too long, and let's get stuck in, Jack. We asked the question last week when we were previewing this game, what would constitute progress, or at least some greater sense of satisfaction, a silver lining maybe, even if United were to lose at Arsenal? And I think the answer we came up with in essence, or in short, was to see us extend some control on a game away at a top rival, at a top team. I think United did that for extended periods at the Emirates. Would you agree?
I would. It clearly is far from the finished article at this point, which we can obviously go into in more detail. But I think if you take last year's performance at the Emirates as sort of the baseline, I think this was clearly a marked improvement from that. It's still, you know, we were under pressure for periods of the game, especially in the second half, where I feel like our level and our ability to get any control of the game was diminished. But the first half in particular, I did feel like United did control the game without looking too threatening, which is sort of the caveat, but we did exert a level of control. We were able to kind of stem the excitement inside the Emirates. We slowed the game down. We played it at our tempo.
Yep.
I think it highlighted to me the big difference really between De Gea and Onana.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Because I don't think we would have been able to play anywhere near the level that we did with a different goalkeeper in between the sticks.
No, and look, we've lost 3-1 and we're starting very positively here, but I think that's just to lift the mood ever so slightly before we come on to just how cruel a defeat that was. But absolutely, watching Onana, we've said this every week, but it's just this great sense of comfort, a completely different feeling watching him. And absolutely, that was the key. I'd be interested to watch the game back. I won't do, because there's better things in life to do than suffer that same pain once again. But I'd be interested to watch the game back and see if there were any other players in particular who were really helping with that. But to me, it generally felt like an honour. There were a couple of moments where Arsenal did put some proper pressure on him, and there was a lovely little turn at one point. Lisandro Martinez did a very great turn early on in the game as well. But a lot of the time, Arsenal just allowed an honour to have it, and I think that was a sign of their recognition of the quality he has. We spoke about when I interviewed Rasmus Højlund and asked him about playing against Onana in Serie A last season, and Højlund said that his manager at Atalanta had told him not to even bother pressing Onana because you're not going to get the ball off him and he's not going to mess up his pass and he's going to be too composed. And that's what we're seeing. And yeah, it absolutely changes the way that United can play in these games. And perhaps haven't really seen as much of a benefit against Forest at home, which was a pretty unique game state and that United were chasing a three-goal comeback from the fourth minute. At Tottenham, we maybe saw it a little, and at Wolves, not the greatest game to judge either. I think this was the best example of it so far, and also of his leadership, because not only was he providing that quality on the ball and that kind of composure at the back, but also in judging the amount of time to take goal kicks very well, kind of pulling that atmosphere out of the Emirates, which has had such a massive improvement since they became good again. And when United conceded so quickly after scoring our first goal with Rashford, which was such an enormous error and such a waste of brilliant work from Rashford and the whole team in the opening stages, Onana was the one to kind of show that leadership in those moments after conceding. And he's such a, so much character there. He comes storming out of his goal after United concede and everyone's got their heads down, and he's just this massive figure just waving his hands about going, calm down, this is what you need to do. He's great. Very positive for goalkeeper who conceded three times.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is now 8 goals conceded in 4 games, and really I don't think there's too much that you could say that he's done massively wrong.
He got close to that Declan Rice one, didn't he? But you can't be, yeah. I mean, maybe De Gea would have saved that, but I think it's basically an irrelevant hypothetical.
Yeah, and I really do think that Onana was the biggest difference compared to what we saw last year in this game. A lot of the other aspects really of, I think, the two teams, the way the game panned out, were eerily similar to the fixture back in January, really. Not just in sort of the way the game played out, but, you know, even just the fact that the way we scored after, you know, halfway.
Rashford targeting down that left side, doing really well, was kind of
You know, trying to keep the ball to try and stem the tide of Arsenal's attacks. And we obviously did that much better this year than last year, but it wasn't that far removed, really. And then the second half becoming, you know, much more difficult and Arsenal really starting to gain a lot more momentum in the game. I think for United, this is why this is such a difficult one to take, because as we always say, the margins are so, so tight. And I sort of go back to the tweet you mentioned from our friend John McKenzie before this game, saying this is sort of narrative perfection. Whichever team wins is fine. Whichever team loses is fucked. And, you know, if Garnacho if Gabriel doesn't step up a couple of inches further than he does, then we're probably talking about a famous United, you know, smash and grab win at the Emirates. Arsenal are floundering, you know, United have no problems. And now, like I said, because of an offside by a few inches, and a goal from a corner right at the end, we're now sitting here thinking, well, maybe Arsenal are, you know, the ones flying. They got the results, and United continue their poor away record against top teams.
Yeah.
There's so many different sort of narratives that come out of this based on those tiny, tiny margins. But I think overall, the signs from this game with United were generally positive, which I think is why it was such a gut punch to concede late on. Like, that's why I think it has had such an impact on us as fans.
Yeah, very, very fine margins. And you have to find a fine balance in the way that, well, as a fan, you can react however you like. But when we're kind of trying to review the game, you have to find a fine balance in that sense, because there's certainly things to criticise. But this is, I mean, in terms of scoreline, we lost 3-2 earlier this year, 3-1 this time. It's less tight, but another tight defeat. Narrow defeat, but the feeling coming out of it is quite different. If we had won in spring, it would have felt like a smash and grab, and this wouldn't have done at all. I think a draw was probably, I would have deemed, a fair result from this game. I don't think United did enough to deserve to win it, and had that Garnacho goal stood and we held out, brilliant. But I think if someone had said that should have been a draw, I would have said, yeah, maybe, but United took our chances. It was that kind of game. My concern is when you say lots of things similar, that the negatives were so familiar again. And so overall, very impressed with the way that United showed much better composure on the ball and managed to control possession and take some of the energy out of Arsenal. But like in spring, we went ahead only to concede very soon after by switching off. Like in spring, we were dominant for 10 or 15 minutes up to, I mean, around the 80th, 85th minute mark. I can't remember exactly what it was in, I think we played them in March or April of this year. It was probably around the 85th minute mark this time around. And then in fairness, these were enforced changes with Johnny Evans coming on for the injured Victor Lindelof, but the way that United played in the final 15 minutes in both games made it pretty obvious what the inevitable outcome was going to be. And that's a real disappointment for me and such a waste of good work. And that's what I have criticism for Ten Hag over, because that's twice now at the Emirates alone, and we've also discussed this quite a few times, it's happened at other grounds as well. That's twice in this fixture in the last 6 or 7 months that we seem to have made the same mistake and invited the pressure from Arsenal, and in the end it's been too much.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I talk about a lot on this podcast, about seeing out games, and this is a little bit different because we obviously weren't trying to protect a lead, but I think a lot of clubs struggle, and United probably more than most top clubs. I mean, just to, I guess, put it in the most simple terms possible, if you give very good teams 15 minutes to just attack you with effectively nothing, no real any real ability to kind of break up that pattern of play, they are going to score, or at the very least, they're going to create some very good chances, which they did through the Saka one with, what was that, about the 80th minute, where he hit it straight at Onana from 15 yards out. You know, it's inconceivable to me that you can think that you can just hang on like that. And I understand that, like you mentioned, we had arguably our fifth and sixth choice centre-backs on the pitch at that point. So yeah, I get that it was tough for United. You know, we're playing arguably our, well, maybe our second choice, well, probably our third or fourth choice left-back at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I do understand all of those caveats, but United had proven that we have the ability to slow the game down, to take some of the sting out of this fixture from the first minute. And that all kind of went out the window. And I agree, I do think that has to go down to Ten Hag. We also, I also understand why we may not have wanted to try and keep the ball at the back, because A, you know, we did have two centre-backs that were very rusty and not quite as good on the ball as, at least as good as Martinez. And also, you know, Arsenal were probably going to be a lot more aggressive at that point in the game. But we had Hoyland on the pitch, and Hoyland showed, and we'll get onto his cameo much more, I'm sure, but he showed this great physical presence, this ability to occupy defenders, to hold the ball up.
He was fantastic, wasn't he? It was such an amazing contrast between Martial, who, as usual, drew the ire of United's travelling support for his, it's not lethargic, because that's just is how he is as a player, but his jogging and his lack of intensity and contribution of any kind.
Hoyland showed that physical presence.
Hoyland showed exactly what can happen when you just have a bit of that presence. And it shifted it entirely, because Arsenal had to start much deeper.
Yeah.
And suddenly the United had much more of a hold on the game, having, because the first half we did have that hold on the game, and then coming out after half time, we didn't have it. I thought when Kai Havertz got the penalty, which was correctly overturned, I was surprised it was, but correctly overturned. But at that point, when we were standing there waiting for the penalty to be taken, we thought, oh, Ten Hag, he's changed things too slowly again, because substitutes were ready to come on after that penalty. In the end, he then waited another 8 minutes as well. It took too long and it felt like that. And then it took until the 67th minute introduction of Hoyland for things to change. And it did change it entirely. He was brilliant. And obviously it was a penalty shout, which I haven't reviewed it. It looks more of a penalty than the first couple of times I saw it, but I don't want to get too bogged down in the refereeing decisions. But yeah, he was great.
He was. And I guess before I come on to him specifically, just in terms of what it should and could have done for United in that last 10 or 15 minutes, is that we now had the ability to go long, to get bodies further up the pitch. And I would not have been upset at all if United at that point decided, all right, look, we've got Maguire and Evans as our centre-back partnership. We have an Arsenal team that are very clearly going to be going all guns blazing to try and win the ball back very high up the pitch against us. Let's push every single player up over the halfway line, and let's go long to Hoyland. That's why you have a 6'4" striker who can occupy defenders, who can win the physical battles up there. And even if the ball gets turned over, it's going to be in a scrappy form. Arsenal not going to have good possession. And the crucial, they're going to have it in a very tight space in their own half where we can easily win the ball back. I do have sympathy for why we didn't continue to try to play this very slow, methodical, kind of take the sting out of the game
I was fine seeing that be dropped, understood that, but it was the fact that it was sitting back so far, and regardless of the
outball, we had an opportunity to squeeze up the pitch and just let Hoyland do the long
ball. But even with that, I agree, but even without that, it was, we'd clear a ball and be so slow to push out again. And it's such a common thing you hear in a stadium. when your team's holding on to a lead, or just trying not to concede, basically. When your team's under a lot of pressure and you hear that constantly, push out, get out, get out. And yet, and you hear it at Sunday League as well, and yet it was too slow. That's what disappointed me. Or maybe not disappointed me. I'm probably disappointed more with the thing that you're saying, but infuriated me was that lack of eagerness to push out and really take a bit of control of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it is a fatigue thing mainly, I think. And I mean, Maguire and Evans shouldn't really have been too fatigued because they'd obviously only been on for a few minutes. But I think the fullbacks, Casemiro and Eriksen looked really, really fatigued at the end. And I've been in that situation at Sunday League where you're hanging on to a lead and you know that you need to get up, but to be honest, you don't want to have to run backwards again. And so you end up just kind of staying on the edge of the penalty area. But that's where it takes, you know, the manager and leaders in the team to push to drag them.
Well, it's fine for you to do that at Sunday League, but they're paid a lot of money to do
that.
But
I mean, that for me is more like a fatigue thing, which in itself is an issue this early in the season. But the more sort of how we tried to approach that to me is much more on Ten Hag and the players to some degree. But like, that's something very easily in our control. You know, how we're going to take goal kicks, how we're going to try and get out of our own area when we win the ball back. And it just felt like we had the perfect striker for that situation and we didn't really take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That being said, and we have mentioned it, but Ten Hag was just hamstrung again by a whole load of factors. Injuries, of course. And the fact that Leicester's 2018 centre-back pairing is what finished the game there.
I forgot that they would have played together at Leicester for that season.
It's incredible. And I said to my brother and my dad when Johnny Evans came on, bear in mind, at the time I didn't know that Lindelof was injured. I didn't know that Martinez was injured either. That wasn't clear in the ground. Only found that out after. But when Evans came on, I said, I would have been nervous seeing Johnny Evans come on in 2014 or 2015, let alone 2023, to see out a game against Arsenal. And he didn't do anything. He was fine. But it was an indictment of the options that Ten Hag had available, as was the fact that Dan Gore and Hannibal were the options to come on into midfield, as was the fact that Christian Eriksen played a full game. I mean, I could not tell you the last time that happened.
Yeah, I mean, the bad luck that we've had with injuries to start the year is frightening, to be honest. And you say about like the lack of options in midfield, I completely agree. Actually, at centre-back, I don't really think it is a lack of options. We have four very capable...
That's just bad luck.
Is just pure bad luck. But yeah, midfield...
Sorry to interrupt before we continue. I've just checked. Having said, I can't remember the last time Eriksen played a full 90 minutes.
He played last week,
against Nottingham Forest, I'll try to find out before then.
I remember noticing that last week, which is the only reason I had it in my mind. Before that, I'm sure it was a long time ago.
You carry on your point and I'll find out.
But yeah, I mean, the start of the season in some ways has been a complete disaster in the sense of how many injuries we've got, the struggles in the transfer market, the club not being sold, you know, now drama between Ten Hag and Jadon Sancho as well. In many ways, we've been...
There's more than that as well.
...handed a set of circumstances.
You do well to remember it all.
There's, you know, been not been handed a set of circumstances. That makes United way too passive in the situation. Partially been handed and partially created a set of circumstances that I think most clubs would really struggle to handle.
Yeah.
To have 6 points out of 12, I don't want to say it because it feels like it downplays how the questions that we still have on the pitch. It could be a lot worse.
Yeah. I think you're right in saying that the defence is just bad luck, but the midfield
is a problem of our own making, 100%.
Completely. And we'll talk more in depth about transfers near the end of this episode. But United should have had Amrabat available for this game, even if they were leaving it very late in the window, and they didn't. And Ten Hag is the latest in the line of United managers following Solskjaer, Mourinho and Van Gaal before him, who is hamstrung by the ownership and the structure of the club. And no denying that. So we're now at this strange point where we're seeing familiar things happen with Ten Hag that we saw and we were disappointed in with previous managers. And I think the difference now is that it's happened so many times with so many different types of managers that I hope, and certainly from my perspective, United fans will give Ten Hag more time. No one's ever turned on, E-Reds maybe, but match-going fans have not turned on Solskjaer, Mourinho or Van Gaal before. but I hope Ten Hag will be given more time because I'm not saying this as if there's any discussion about sacking him, but I hope long term Ten Hag will be given time because we've seen that the benefits of bringing a new manager in are pretty short term, and ultimately United will be hamstrung while this ownership continues. Ten Hag is doing a good job. He's not perfect, but he's doing a very good job. And I think we did see those signs of progress that we wanted to see at the Emirates. We should probably very quickly talk about the officiating decision. In fact, let's have our first guest to play a clue.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
While we're at this juncture in the conversation, if you would please, it's me guessing this week, Jack setting the clue of a past or present Manchester United player or staff member. There'll be three clues. So if you want to go ahead with clue one, that would be great.
First clue is very simple. Just, I have won 26 major trophies in my career.
Oh, my instant thoughts are it's, well, a United player from basically from the class of 92 or one of the Barcelona players who also played United, which would be Victor Valdez or Gerard Piqué. But yeah, it's not enough for me to have a guess. So I'll wait for clue two before I have a stab in the dark. Refereeing decisions. You will be better placed than me to talk about these because I've seen a couple of replays, but it's particularly in the Arsenal way end where you're almost beneath the pitch as we were in row four. It's very hard to see, particularly at the other end. Garnacho was so tight, wasn't it? There's a lot of controversy about it. I mean, it's not why the offside rule is there, is it? But by the rules, it's probably... I just have to assume it's correct. Otherwise, I'm going to lose all faith in everything.
I've got to say, I didn't even celebrate the goal, which was a really sad situation, honestly, but I thought he was offside.
If I give you my perspective, we were basically in line with the goal. So quite hard to tell anyway. I thought he was offside when the ball was, or kind of, I thought he might be offside. I didn't think he was offside. I thought he might be offside when the ball was played. I then waited half a second to check while everyone was going berserk around me to check the linesman hadn't put his flag up, saw he kept his flag down, and then absolutely lost the run of myself, as did all the other thousands of United fans in there. It was a brilliant moment, just ruined. I was saying to my brother, I'd rather, there's so many shit things about VAR, but this is not a philosophical point of or anything big, but I would rather have the celebration and it be ruled out than just not have the chance to kind of let out all those emotions for that moment, even though it's so much more gutting after. But anyway, yeah, carry on.
To me, it's just about the process of it. I don't understand why we don't have those semi-automatic offsides in the Premier League. They were supposedly going to come in this year and it got delayed. That would clear up any of... Because the only controversy here is where the lines were drawn. And, you know, we don't know exactly what goes into doing all that, and the angles that you get do make it hard, especially when you're watching on TV, to know whether the lines are drawn correctly. We should just have the semi-automatic offsides. It's the most definitive angle you can get. It makes it so easy to see. Because to be honest, it did look like Garnacho was offside. And the only reason there's dispute about it is because we rely on a referee, not an actual sort of technically trained person, to draw some lines on a screen. Yeah,
absolutely. The other decisions, Højlund penalty or no penalty? Ten Hag thought so.
I don't think so. I think if that goes against United, we'd be fuming at that. To me, the reason why it wasn't, I don't think Højlund ever fully got his body completely in front of Gabriel. I think if he did that, it would have been a penalty. But Gabriel just about managed to sort of stay alongside, and then it was sort of a bit of wrestling back and forth.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I've seen them given, and I don't think it would have been overturned if it got given.
Yeah.
But I don't have a huge problem with that not being a penalty.
I didn't think it was a penalty in the ground, nor did I think when I saw the replays while slightly pissed yesterday. Looking at it today, from a few more angles, I think there is an argument to be made. I'm more surprised, if I remember correctly, and I might be wrong, but if I remember correctly, there was very little time taken over that one. And that was partly because United took a throw in very quickly. Yeah.
Well, I think it was also partly because Højlund didn't react to it at all. He kind of smacked the ground in frustration at himself. He didn't really appeal for it. And I think, like, it shouldn't be the case, but because VAR reviews have to get triggered by a human, often it does take appealing very vigorously to actually get the game to be delayed for a proper check to happen.
Yeah, I think he just got, he maybe slightly unfairly got out-muscled, but basically got out-muscled. Saying that, me and my brother were saying, I haven't seen a striker, apart from Haaland, kind of show that kind of power against Saliba before.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. There were a few moments where those long balls did come up and we said there weren't kind of enough of them. But in that period between him coming on and us scoring the disallowed goal, where he'd let the ball bounce twice and keep backing into Saliba completely fairly, keep doing it. And it was amazing. So
the one from a throw, I remember on our right-hand side too, where Wan-Bissaka had no options and basically Bruno Fernandes just points down the line, and then Højlund immediately got the idea, charged over, got in front of Gabriel, and ended up, I think that might have been the one actually where he ended up giving it away but just seeing the physical presence to be able to do that and offer us that out ball, that's exactly what you want to see.
Yeah, really looking forward to seeing him play more. If I think about Martial's performance, 67 minutes, I don't remember anything. No. Whereas Højlund's, there's a penalty shout, which I actually think he probably should have shot early with his right foot anyway. But there was another one where Rashford was storming forward and played the ball. Lost the ball when he should have fed Højlund through, particularly because Højlund was left-footed and he could have swept it in first time. And that's the kind of goal I've seen him score before.
There
was one other... the one where Rashford did get past his man and pulled it back and Højlund's kind of back heel shot was blocked, and all of that in 20 minutes is good going, as well as changing the game and just with his presence. So yeah, really looking forward to seeing.
And he makes it easier for Rashford too, because it's not as easy for centre-backs to basically pull out to wide areas and help out their fullback there, because Højlund occupies the centre-back so much more.
Is there anything else before we talk about the Jadon Sancho situation briefly?
I think just I mentioned it at the start that there were still ways to go for United. I think the big thing that we still have to improve on is being able to progress the ball against well-organized pressing teams. Like, we did well against Arsenal in how much we kept the ball, especially the first half. You know, we really did slow the game down. We kept it to our tempo, and Onana made the absolute world of difference. But we do need to improve at being able to actually move the ball forward into the opposition half in when we're in those scenarios. Like, there were so many occasions, basically every time a United midfielder received the ball, unless it was Casemiro when he dropped in as a third centre-back, which I was pleased to see that we did that. Anytime Eriksen or Casemiro received the ball in the midfield line, they had their back to goal and they were faced up immediately by an Arsenal defender, so they couldn't turn. Which, you know, Arsenal are a good pressing team. That's what good pressing teams do. They stop you from being able to easily turn upfield. The key then for United is we have to give them better options other than just playing it either back to where the ball's come from or out wide into another player that's under pressure. We need better third man runs to offer a little layoff so that someone else can then make the off ball run to take the ball forward, provide better round the corner options if we can then get us moving forward like that. Obviously, these things are high risk, but that's what a high pressing team force you to do, is take slightly more risks. But then if you're able to make that one pass, you can take 5-6 players out of the game. And that is the piece of it. Like, if last year's performance at the Emirates was sort of ground zero, if you like, and then where we're trying to get to is like 100% better than that, I felt like we were at sort of 45-50% of the way there yesterday.
I was just thinking about how much I'd say this is progress. I would call this toddler steps.
Yeah.
I think it was a little better than baby steps, but it wasn't, this wasn't a massive change. Ultimately, the biggest reason this was different to last year was a change in personnel in Onana and Højlund coming on and Garnacho bringing that brilliance late on. Because had United won, I think we'd be saying the same, that the difference was in those three changes in personnel rather than in how the team was, how much the team as a whole had got better. And I think that's fair. Such as are the fine margin to these games. Sancho, this put a down on things post-match. I've I read the 10 hour quotes yesterday. I've watched the actual quotes today. So initially when I read them, I'm sure, maybe people would have agreed having seen them. It felt to me like reading them that Ten Hag was pissed off and probably wouldn't have said that. It seemed fairly inflammatory and wouldn't have said that if we'd lost, not from a last minute winner after a few controversial refereeing decisions. It looked pretty unhelpful from the manager to me, given that the transfer window is closed and that United have enough shit going on right now. But having watched them, they're pretty... they're pretty tame. Ten Hag is basically saying, he's asked why Sancho and McTominay aren't in the squad. He says McTominay's ill and Sancho's level wasn't good enough in training and I went with other players. Given that, Sancho's statement and response is much worse, completely unnecessary, and ultimately he's been brighter this season and I've been enjoying watching his first few performances, but he is well paid enough to take a bit of criticism on the chin, ignore what's on social media and knuckle down and earn his place in the team. Responding like that, not for me.
Yeah, I think I've got sort of two main things to say, I guess, in response to the whole situation and mainly about what Sancho said. The first is I can fully understand why he feels aggrieved to not be in the squad and not be getting more minutes, given that Garnacho and Antony didn't start the season well at all. And yeah. I think it was understandable why Garnacho, like being that Sancho's main position was on the left, we were both fully in agreement that Garnacho should have started the season ahead of Sancho out there. And I think that was absolutely fine. First couple of games, both Garnacho and Antony were really poor. Obviously, the thing that complicated it was Rashford moving back out to the left and then Martial coming in. And I don't think that Sancho was ever really an option at number nine. So that sort of took up his spot. But I can understand why he might feel aggrieved in general that he hasn't been given more opportunities, given that our wingers have started the season quite poorly. And like you said, the cameos that he has had have been relatively positive. So that scenario, that situation, I do have sympathy for Sancho. The point that he made, though, about being scapegoated...
Well, I don't really have sympathy for him because he's been a bit better. But if he'd actually been brilliant, he would have got a start and he hasn't. He's been a bit better and that's it. And Ten Hag can't just be judging it off the last couple of games. He has to judge off how much he trusts the player, and Sancho did very little to earn that trust last season.
Sure, but I don't think Garnacho and Antony have done any more to earn that trust though, really, at the start of this year, have they? I'm not saying that Sancho needed to be starting every single game.
No, but over the last year.
I can understand why he's frustrated that he wasn't given a few more opportunities in the first three games. That doesn't mean that he should be making this statement in response to what Ten Hag said, because ultimately what Ten Hag said is quite tame. Yeah. But I just, in general, I can understand why he's frustrated at how few minutes he has played.
Yeah.
But the scapegoated point, I have zero sympathy for him at all. If anything, Sancho has been coddled and protected more than you would expect any player to be protected by a manager. You know, I mean, he was taken out the firing line for 3-4 months in the middle of last year to kind of step away from football, get his mind in a better place. He was reintegrated into the squad, given quite a lot of opportunities to start last year in multiple different positions as Ten Hag, you know, was really trying to find the best way to use him. I don't think Sancho has ever been anywhere close to a scapegoat at Man United, either among the fan base or among the coaching staff. So that point, I don't know where that's come from at all. But I mean, this seems like a situation that will be difficult to recover from. And I think for Sancho, the worry is, this isn't the first time that he's been called out for this kind of thing. This has happened for England before, where Gareth Southgate was coming under pressure for not playing Sancho despite him playing really well for Dortmund at that time. Southgate said it was because he wasn't playing well in training. It's happened at Dortmund, where there were supposedly some discipline issues around being late for team meetings and training quite a lot. When a player gets... We often talk about how like players get trusted by manager after manager and how it's a sign of, you know, how good a professional they are, like Mason Mount at Chelsea or even like McTominay at United, how he seems to be somewhat of a favourite of every manager. Sancho seems to have a little bit of that trait in the opposite direction. And I think that is a big worry for the rest of his career.
Yeah. Stat of the week comes from Rich Jolly, who, I mean, frankly, would provide the stat of the week every week if this was a regular feature on the United Weekly podcast, who says, Well, he said this before Johnny Evans' play. When Johnny Evans makes his second Manchester United debut, it will mean that in every season from 1935-36 onwards, United have fielded someone who has played or would play for either Sir Matt Busby or Sir Alex Ferguson, which is a fantastic stat. His most famous stat, Rich Jolly, I think, was, and I can't remember the exact year, but it would have been, the stat was basically that in every season since this year, and I'm going to work it out in my head, one of Gianluigi Buffon, Peter Shilton or Sir Stanley Matthews has played. And I'm pretty sure Stanley Matthews' career would have started around 1932 or 33, I think. So it was roughly since 1932, one of Stanley Matthews, Peter Shilton or Gianluigi Buffon has made an appearance. And that's Rich Dolly's most famous one. Obviously Buffon has retired now, so that is over. I wonder who will be the long-serving player, which means Rich Dolly can tweet that with an extra player in something like 2050. who knows? Maybe Alejandro Garnacho. We'll see.
Yeah, he probably won't be far off.
Probably
yeah.
Jude Bellingham, actually, given he started at 16. Yeah, who are just... I'm gutted he didn't come to United, but Jude Bellingham at Real Madrid is just a joy. Everything about it. Yeah. Guess the player... Clue two, please.
All right. So clue two. So to remind you, the first clue was that this player has won 26 major trophies in their career. The second clue is this player not only played for Man United, but also played for the club in the city where I now live, Chicago Fire.
Ooh, interesting. Bastian Schweinsteiger played for Chicago Fire, didn't he? But 26 seems quite a lot for him. I know he would have won quite a lot of Bundesliga titles and a couple of Champions Leagues. Well, actually, maybe only one Champions League in 2013. Yeah, Chelsea was 2012. But if you're counting kind of German Cups as well, I don't know, 26 seems a lot. I know like Gary Neville won about 20 for United and the Barca players won upwards of 30. Ferguson won upwards of 30 and Giggs did. So 26 is a lot. I'm going to mull it over. I might give you that as my guess before... Okay. The third clue, but I'm just going to have a think in case anyone else comes to mind. But yeah, for now, we're going to go into our Patreon Q&A. You can listen to it every week. We had a really good one last week. I'm sure we'll have a great one again this week. You can listen to it for as little as £1.50 a month. And yeah, it's normally pretty good value. Some great questions and a bit more relaxed than the rest of the show as we get to know our Patreon community a bit better each week. So we're going to head into that now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's have the academy briefing before we have the final guest to play a clue and then talk a little bit about the off-pitch stuff. In short, two very high-scoring games. The under-21s, remarkable 10-goal game, 5-5. Shola Shoretiri and Joe Hugo scored a brace each before half-time. Amari Forson continued to score for United away at Sunderland just after half-time, 2 minutes into the second half. United then conceded five before the end of the game. They were 5-0 up and drew 5-5. Remarkable. Sunderland, two kind of unstoppable goals, not literally unstoppable, but brilliant strikes from long range. So those can kind of just be forgiven. But three goals that United should have been more switched on for, and to give up a 5-goal lead is, well, it's poor. There's lots of lessons to be learned from there. I'm sure they will know that. The final goal that Sunderland scored was in the 98th minute for, yeah, just a ridiculous draw. So yeah, a mad, mad, mad game. The under-18s won 4-1. In the Premier League Cup against Reading. Gabriel Bincherry scored a hat-trick. His final goal was very nice. Ethan Wheatley scored the other one. Bincherry signed from United. He's 16. Signed from United from Cardiff back in February. He scored on his under-18s debut last year, but didn't play very much for them because he then played for Wales at the under-17s Euros. He's managed to move well. I think he's found it, as with all young players, has found it a little bit difficult just moving away from home at that age, moving away from your mates and your family. But pretty turbulent start to United going away with Wales and having like GCSEs and all of that, and he's handling it well. I think the coaches have been impressed, so he'll be one of the main forwards for the 18s this season and has started the campaign well. That's about it really. Oh, well, loan news. Alvaro Fernandez gone to Granada. Charlie McNeil gone to Stevenage. He was at Newport County last year, scored 2 goals in about 15 appearances. Can't remember exactly how many. He stepped a level up. Newport win League 2, Stevenage are in League 1, so that's a good move for him. Alvaro Fernandez was allowed to go to Granada once United signed Reguilón. It's a decent move. I probably would have preferred to see him play in the Premier League instead of La Liga, just for style reasons. But it's a big team. And yeah, hopefully he does well. You just hope he plays a lot of games. I think that's the only ones I can remember off the top of my head. I'm sure there are a couple others, but we'll talk about them later in the season anyway. Jack, we need to wrap up soon because we had quite a long patron Q&A. So if you want to hear a lot of that discussion, then sign up to be a patron. But can we have guess a player clue 3? In fact, fuck it. Let me guess Bastian.
I was going to say, do you want to lodge an official guess?
Yeah, I'll just have an official stab at Bastian Schweinsteiger.
All right. Well, the final clue is I spent just 2 seasons with Man United, ooh, but before that played for 13 years in the Bundesliga.
Ah, yeah. Got to be Bastian.
And you are right about the honours thing, but what helps Schweinsteiger's case is that he won technically the FA Cup, Europa League and League Cup at United, even though in the second of those seasons, he barely played.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He won the FA Cup at the end of Van Gaal's era, and then he was part of the squad that won the FA Cup and the League Cup. He barely played in that season with Marine. I think he made like a couple of League Cup appearances.
23 major trophies at Bayern, which would be a Champions League.
And plus the World Cup as well.
Yeah. It does seem a lot.
So I think it was like 7 or 8 league titles. 7 German Cups. I included German Super Cups in there, which is a bit naughty.
They do and then count
there's
for
also
them,
a Club World Cup in there as well.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Divisive figure, I think, Schweinsteiger for United fans. I was very excited when he joined and very let down for pretty much the next 2 years.
I mean, basically what we wanted, it's almost identical to Casemiro, really. Like, we wanted Schweinsteiger to be what Casemiro was last year, basically.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Very true. As I said, we need to crack on. Off the pitch, I think Tim Ogden, who writes for United We Stand, tweeted, he said, "Planet Manchester United continues to be very inhabitable," which I thought was a good summary. He said, "Better performance today, but so much negativity around the club with takeover, results, injuries, Greenwood. It has been a brutal start to the season and it only continues. Because just before we were recording, further reports came out about allegations towards Anthony about abuse towards his girlfriend, which are pretty sickening to read. And there's not so much we can say about this, but it's a continuation of, negativity around United and another very difficult case for the club to deal with. And there's only so much we can say. But the other negative thing this week was that the report came out from the Mail on Sunday that the Glazers are planning to take United off the market. Gary Neville on Sky's coverage seemed to think that this is more of a ploy to keep the price rising rather than a genuine story. And there are arguments to both sides, the primary ones being that the Glazers can't afford to keep United for much longer, is what Gary Neville was saying. The other idea being that because Ten Hag got United back in the Champions League, they can afford to keep United for maybe 1 or 2 more years without significant, or they think they can afford to keep United for another 1 or 2 more years without significant capital.
So are you saying the United should tank to get the Glazers to sell quicker?
Well, in essence, yes. Yeah. And that is possible because they might think United don't need further investment. We do, because financial fair play is going to restrict us going forward because they refuse to put any money in of their own. Old Trafford is becoming more and more outdated. There should be all the things that United should have, they don't have. And it's not just about players, but like an academy stadium and a win for the academy teams and for United women's playing. Just one of those things that United would absolutely have under different ownership and do not. And a renovated Old Trafford and a renovated Carrington and all of these things. Yeah. It's more bad news. Signings wise, very quickly, happy with deadline day?
It's a case of right outcome, terrible process for me. Like Amrabat is a great signing and he's exactly the kind of player we need. Getting him on loan to get around some of the budget issues we have is fine by me, especially with an option to buy at still a pretty good price at the end of the year. Yep. But it should have been done a month ago. Is really just the crux of it.
Yes.
And like you said, he should have not only been available for Arsenal, he should have been had 2 or 3 appearances by the time the Arsenal game came around.
Yeah, spending 4 million on 4 players on deadline day is a very, very bad sign. And in fairness, Reguilón, fine, that's due to injuries. I might not agree with the decision, but fine. But the others, concerning. Johnny Evans as well, fine, because it's kind of a free contract. But even like Bayern Deer, I mean, should have been happened before. I would say it's brilliant that all four players, and this is a continuation from the past signings, but four players who were absolutely dying to play for United.
Yeah.
The things that Reguilón seems absolutely buzzing to be playing for the club. And I know that's not everything, because Odi Ighalo was buzzing to play for the club. United should never have signed him, but it's good. And Amrabat has been desperate for this move all summer, so I'm pleased for him. And it's cool to have two new nationalities for United as well. Bayern Deer, first Turkish player, Amrabat, first Moroccan player.
Yeah, ultimately, Reguilón, I think, is a fine signing. He's defensively not very good, but he's very good, or can be very, very good in attack. So I think if Malacia comes back before Shaw is available, which I think he is scheduled to, that will give us two decent options there. Malacia, much more defensive-minded. Reguilón, much more attack-minded. Fine. As we already talked about Amrabat. Bayern Deer, you know, again, not particularly high profile, although Onana being back in the Cameroon setup probably means that we will have to rely on our backup goalkeeper for 6 weeks in the winter of this season. But, you know, there were reports that United were on the verge of signing Suzuki from Japan, a young goalkeeper, back in July. And he ended up, you know, wanting to stay in Japan to get more first team football, which is fair enough. But again, it's like, we knew that back then. It's not like he rejected us a week ago.
He moved to Belgium.
Oh, you go to Belgium in the end. My point is we knew about this like over a month ago, you know, and it shouldn't have taken until deadline day. And I understand that people like Richard Arnold and John Murta have had a lot of other stuff to deal with, but a signing that low profile and that low cost could have been delegated to other people.
In the words of Roy Keane, it's their job. Yeah. I've just had, just before we wrap up, just an interesting message come through. The Premier League is producing a new show called Match Officials Mic'd Up, which will see Howard Webb talk viewers through key incidents over the recent match round, giving supporters valuable insight on decision making and the opportunity to hear the conversations between the on-pitch officials and VARs, the first episode of which will be released tomorrow evening. I wonder whether any of the incidents from Arsenal against Manchester United will be included. Interesting. And hopefully a good thing.
Yeah.
I think that program will be shown on Sky and TNT for people interested in seeing it. I don't know what else included.
I think the hearing the conversations as they happen is the big thing, because even like Howard Webb going on MNF every month or whatever he's been doing for the last year or so, like it doesn't really help, because it just makes it look like it's these guys' sort of crony just trying to justify what they've done. You need to hear what they're actually talking about in the moment. And, you know, hopefully hearing that will be, hopefully help give people some understanding of why decisions were made. Because I think most of the time we think decisions are wrong. Even if the outcome is wrong, how they get to that is understandable. But also if there are times when the process of it is terrible, like Mike Dean's interview last week about the Chelsea Spurs game last year, we'll be able to hold people accountable for it.
Well, the problem is it's like the Met Police, like sending out, well, any police force sending out body cam footage that makes them look good in that.
Yeah, they're only going to pick and choose certain ones.
They'll pick and choose the ones that might be controversial, but where there's been no proper mistake made, where it's a matter of opinion, or where they've accepted their mistake, but they might not reveal the conversations that paint them in a bad light.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll see. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We've waffled on for well over an hour. Appreciate you taking the time to hear our opinions and our thoughts and our analysis. If you want more of that throughout the week, you can hear Jack's thoughts or read them on X, formerly known as Twitter.
@UTDTAIT.
I don't think anyone's, the only people I see calling it X are BBC, who must have to do so for contractual, well, for legal reasons, and who consistently refer to it as X, formerly known as Twitter, like Prince, the artist formerly known as Prince. You can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter, @HarryRobinson64, and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. And we better wrap up. Thank you for listening. Have a brilliant week. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.